Welcome to episode 156 of the Family Podcast Network. Yeah, my voice is all jacked up.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network.com, helping you work with your tough kids and even those kids that aren't. With a master's degree in counseling and psychology and 6 years of showing parents how to de-stress their parenting, I'm your very jacked up vocalist host, Trey Gibson. The date today is September 24th, 2012. Our topic for today is going to be dealing with other parents and other kids at school. That's right. Today we're going to go over a listener question that wanted to know, what do we need to do if our kids is having problems or difficulties or issues or conflicts and confrontations with other kids at school? What do we do? Do we go to the parents? Do we not? Do we go to the school? Do we not? Do we go to the kid? Do we not? We're going to cover that today. First off is kind of an apology. If you are wondering what's going on with my voice, I got a little kind of a weird something or another this weekend, bronchitis something. As of Saturday night, I started feeling it, and it's just kind of been progressively worse. I'll be honest, since we modified our diet, a while back, we made a major diet change. I can't announce exactly what that is, largely because my wife is building a website around that change. But this is, in terms of eating for us, we're talking, this is iconoclastic. Never done before. Breaking the mold. Not your South Beach diet or cutting back on carbs. We're talking like this changed everything about the way we were eating. And since then, it's amazing how, like, right now, Six months ago, if I'd have gotten this, I'd have felt like total crap for about probably a week to 2 weeks, probably. Ever since we've started eating better, it's amazing how even whenever I am not, when I'm fighting something off like I am now, it's amazing how good I feel. So anyway, we've had a request to do like nutrition and kids. We will get to that episode. That's my, mark my words on this. We will get there. But we're also building up some stuff into that. So anyway, I apologize now if my voice cracks or poops out on me tonight in various parts. I may have to pause a lot to take sips of tea. I do have my ever lovely assistant here. His name is Earl Gray, and he's going to be assisting me in my voice tonight by hopefully having some hot liquid on him will help. So anyway, guys, first off, before we get into the topic today, let's run through some housekeeping. I got to be honest. I am having a hard time containing myself. It has just been such an amazing weekend. Number one, my Facebook site got completely redone. And I say completely redone. If you saw it before, it was just your standard blah, everybody's got it, classic channel. And anyway, I had a guy come in and professionally redesign it, add some graphics to it. Man, he just did a great job. Simple, elegant, fits the theme of my website. Super impressed. You want to go check that out, you can go to www.thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. In the left bar, you'll see where it says Trey's Tidbits and me leaning up against the YouTube logo. Click on that, jump over, check out my page. It just looks kind of cool. Looks kind of cool. Second off, it's neat. I now have received back the first installment, which is The Lost Art of Parenting. This is a book that that I've been writing for quite a while. We put out section one of The Lost Art of Parenting that is now up for sale. We submitted it to get it professionally covered, professionally designed, and all of the inside of the ebook has been wonderfully done by my editor and artist and a book artist. So anyway, we've got that knocked up. If you want to get that, you can go to the site at www.thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. And if you look in the right-hand bar, the very, very top one up there says Layopt by Trey Gibson, which stands for The Lost Art of Parenting by Trey Gibson. I'm offering it for a very limited time at this very low price of $5 per book. This is going to be book number one in an installment of books that I'm going to be knocking out on the different subjects. They're all going to fall under the purview of The Lost Art of Parenting. This particular one goes over what I feel to be the very best. If you could only learn one thing from me, what would I teach you? It's what I would teach you in this book, and it's the art of praise. How do we praise our kids? How do we praise our kids without them becoming arrogant or prideful? How do we praise our kids in such a way where they don't think that they can do no wrong? When you can answer those questions, I am telling you, you are unlocking the most powerful thing that you can do as a parent. And I'm telling you, I've seen it in my life and in the hundreds of lives that I've gotten to influence through this website and through the other jobs that I've done. So it's the number one book that I would tell everybody. If only they said, I've only got $5 and I only get one book, which one would you get? It's going to be this one, and I wrote it first and published it first for a very good reason. Go check it out. $5. Support the show. Get an amazing book that is almost sure to make some changes in your life that you will just be like, oh my God, what haven't I been doing this forever? So go check out The Lost Art of Parenting by Trey Gibson. If you click on that, it'll take you straight to a checkout page. We made it simple. We made it easy, and we appreciate you guys. All right. Guys, also, don't forget, if you want to get free updates on what's going on, what episodes have been knocked out, right to your email, you can get a list of, hey, what did Trey talk about today? What did he go over? Do I need to go check that out? You can click on it. You can go to free episode updates, put in your name, put in your email, and submit. All of your information is private. I do not like spamming. We do not sell your information to anybody else, and you will get updates on what's going on to make sure that you don't ever want to miss out on one of these episodes, because it could be the one that makes you go, dang it, that's going to make my life so much easier. Also, guys, like us on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, all that other good stuff. We're on LinkedIn. We're on all those good places. Foursquare. Go over there. Check us out on those places. Connect with me. I want to connect with you guys. I know that's what everybody says, but I'll tell you this. I mean it. I actually want to know who I'm talking to. I want to know what you guys are wanting to know. I want to be with you guys in your lives. I'm not talking like prying into your lives. I just mean be a part of, hey, what's going on? What can I help you with? What podcast can I be doing? So I like to do that. Also, don't forget, if these episodes kind of, if you feel like they're heavy duty and you think that they are worth sharing, don't forget to share them on Facebook. I really need that. Also, I need somebody to leave me some positive stuff in iTunes, to go into iTunes and leave me a review. I need that, man. It's so bland and it looks so poo without like a nice little review in there. I mean, even if you think I suck, I mean, seriously, just go leave me a quick review in there. Even if you think I'm a hork dog, which I don't think you guys are listening do, but I just want some feedback in there, just in iTunes. So if you guys would, go jump over there for me and do that. Also, guys, if you want to contact me, questions, comments, thoughts, Trey, what do I do when? Man, can I get this on the show? Can I hear a podcast about this? You guys can email me at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. You guys can also leave me an internet voicemail, so long as you have a microphone connected to your computer. You can also call me at my phone, 661-PARENT-0, 661-PARENT-0, and leave a voicemail. And last, you can always enter in the chat box, whether I'm on or off. You can leave me a message there, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Soon as possible. Well, guys, with all of that out of the way, let's go ahead and jump into our show for today. Before we start off the actual topic today, we are going to introduce a new segment to the Family Podcast Network called...
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Yo, yo, yo. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no.
That's right. This is going to be a segment of the show where we go over parents who have done those things that you cannot help but look at and wonder and think. That's right. We're going to cover a little bit today of just some funny stories of parents. Some of them are funny. Some of them are not. We're going to talk about these stories that some parents do that just make you go, oh, no, you didn't. So up for the board today is a story that hit closer to home than I prefer to admit to. CNN.com reported that we covered not one, not two, but three tales of parents trying to sell their children this year. Delaware mom Bridget was accused of trying to sell her baby for $15,000 so that she could take her other children to Disney World. And next off, from Vancouver, a Washington woman tried to hawk her baby at Taco Bell with a starting price of just $500. And then last, one that I almost don't care to admit to. Mary Lou was in the process of purchasing birth mother Joanna, well, I'm not saying last names here, Joanna's 7-week-old baby on layaway before police and none other than Abilene, Texas busted them. That's my hometown. It's just, I read that. I was looking for these things and I found this on CNN. I thought, oh, these will be perfect. And I was reading through this. I thought, oh my God. Oh no, you didn't. Not from Abilene, Texas, but sure enough, way too close to home. Something just makes me wish I could have dropped off a business card that said, hey, go check out this guy at Family Podcast Network. He'll de-stress your parenting and you don't have to sell him anymore. You don't have to sell him anymore. Okay, well, that wraps up our Oh No, You Didn't segment. Let's go ahead and jump into our topic for today, which is going to be dealing with other parents and other kids. That's right. Today, we're going to talk a smidge about what do you do if your kid's having a problem with another kid at school. And nothing's changing. Nothing's getting better. What should you do? This was a listener question that was emailed in to me that said, do you suggest going through the school if your kid has an issue with another child? Or do you ever deal directly with the parent? I hold my daughter very accountable, and I find other parents think that their sweet child, in quotes, should never be or could never be to blame. First off, I want to say to this listener, man, fantastic on what you said about being, you know, holding your kids accountable. I think that is a beautiful thing. I also think it's a thing that very few parents do. If we can get our kids to get to that point where they can self-evaluate and then make changes, if we can get a kid that we hold them accountable to the things that they're supposed to do and not do, the strengths in their personalities as well as the areas they've got to grow in, if we hold our kids accountable to those, then I'm telling you, you are handing that kid the world. I don't mean that to be cliche. I don't mean that to be dumb. I mean that. You literally are handing your kids the keys to one of the most difficult problems that I see a large majority of the kids that the parents are having problems with and I have personally worked with in their lives that they're struggling with, is that these kids don't have any accountability and they don't take responsibility for what's going on in their lives. So when you do that, when you give them that ability to self-evaluate and make changes, it changes them completely, and this cannot be done. Your kids cannot get to this point where they can self-evaluate, where they can take a look at, okay, what are my actions in all of this? That other person may be a total butt face and a jerkwad or whatever, but you know, what did I do? What can I do differently to avoid these situations? When you give them that availability and the knowledge to do that, I mean, I'm telling you, it's an amazing thing, and it can't be done without that accountability. Now, I want to make sure I'm very clear here. Am I saying that anytime our kids have a problem with somebody else, it's their fault? No, absolutely not. In many cases, as a matter of fact, it's not that. It's these other kids who are abusive, you know, abusive verbally, emotionally, physically in some cases. And, you know, these kids are, I mean, they're perpetrators for all intents and purposes. And so don't hear me saying I'm blaming the way this other kid is acting on the behavior of our kids when this happens, because I'm not. I'm absolutely not. But I think everybody owes it to themselves to take a look at, how can I help prevent this? Sometimes you just can't. Some kids are just hurting inside, and they act like little turds. That's just the nature of the beast. And sometimes you can't avoid it or get around it. But in some cases, there are other options. You know, I'm a firm proponent for, or maybe I should say, I'm firmly against the idea that you either do A or you do B. I am very big on, okay, that's great. What are the other options too? What's A, B, C, D, E, and F? Well, you know, what are those options as well? That's a very, very big thing to me. So honestly, the first, you know, like in first place, what I recommend you begin with is start off with keeping your kids accountable. I mean, so like, you know, when I had a mom a while back, this is a question that comes up pretty regularly. She asked me, she goes, why? Why should I, if this other kid is being a butt, why should I begin with working with my kid? Here's the number one reason why. Without relationship, it's really hard to change other people. My guess is that there's probably not a relationship with this kiddo. You went on later in the email to mention that it's kind of one of your pet peeves. Don't get me wrong. It is mine as well. Parents that think their kids are just sweet and delicious when in reality, the minute that they turn around, because of the way they've parented up to this point, the kids have just learned they've just got to be sweet and delicious as long as mommy and daddy's eyes are me. There's never been the ingraining of those ethical or moral beliefs into them that they perform them even when mommy and daddy aren't looking. So that's a peeve of mine as well. The problem again is that if you don't have a relationship with that kid or with that parent, It is really difficult to change those actions. It's almost impossible to change the actions of others without physically forcing them, which is not what we want to do. It's very, very, very hard. There's an old saying, and I think we've used it a dozen times here on this show, but people don't care what you know or what you want until they know that you care about them. And I think it's a fundamental thing of relationships that we forget. I know I forget this all the time. People really don't care what we know or what we want from them or how we want them to change or how we want them to be. They don't care up until the point that they know that we really care about them. We want them to change because of how it can benefit them. And so this is a hard thing to do without starting with ourselves first. So I always recommend begin in your family, number one. Number one, teach your kiddos how to respond to these kids. Try to educate them and have them go through, okay, what happened? Well, they said this. Okay, then what did you do? Well, I did this. Okay, did that get you a better or worse result? Well, you know, it got me a good one or got me a bad one or whatever. Okay, well, let's see if they say bad. What can we do different next time? What can we try? What can we try next time? Now, remember, what am I telling you here? I'm not telling you to go and give your kids suggestions on what to do. They're probably great suggestions. My guess is they're probably better suggestions than your kid can come up with. But remember, the purpose of parenting is to not give our kids the knowledge, it's to teach them how to find it. And so we want our kids to come across these results. We want them to think. We want them to think. So first, teach your kids how to respond to these kids as much as you can. Get them processing what happened. Get them processing what worked, what didn't work, what can we do next time. Next off, teach your kids empathy. One of my number one questions, and some of this admittedly is because, I mean, I'm your classic therapist type, but one of my first questions is what's going on with this kid? Why is this kid who's being a butt, why is he acting this way? What's going on? What's going on in this kid's life that will cause him or her to break pretty standard set of social rules? And even little kids typically know to break these rules and do whatever it is they're doing, to say whatever it is they're saying, to create whatever issue is being created. What's going on in their life? What causes a person to get to that point? And I've had so many teachers that I've worked with in the past that they come to me and they, Trey, this kid, I'm ready to punch him. Man, they're driving me nuts. I mean that metaphorically, but they're just like, Trey, we're fed up. And I sit down with this kid for two or three, four sessions, and I hear this story that's just like, oh, dear God, bless this kid's heart. I get permission from the parents and the kid to go talk to the teachers about it. Give that story to the teachers, and then the teachers go, wow, that changes everything. And they become more lenient with him. So I always recommend teach your kids to be empathic. What's going on? What's going up with, you know, what's going on with this kid that's causing this? And we'll talk some more about this later, you know, not just the kid level, but on the parental level. What can we do? Not only with ourselves, but with this kid, but then also with the parents of this kid. What's going on in their life? Teaching our kids to ask themselves, what would cause a person to be this way when it's not typically the way we're told to be? Next off, teach kids how to set boundaries. Teach them when to draw the line, to say this is enough, when what is enough. Teach them to find what that is and to believe what that is. Authorize them to do what you believe is appropriate. For some of you guys, you might say if it's just, you know, some gossipy, you know, some hurtful words or something like that. And don't get me wrong, some of these little girls can be nasty nowadays. I've worked with suicidal kiddos who were literally on the verge of killing themselves solely because of the hurtful things that some girls at school were saying. And especially like on Facebook and whatnot. And so, you know, I always encourage you to teach your kids how to set those boundaries. When is enough enough? When do you say enough? How do you respond to those things? You may live in a family where you say, we never authorize physical force. So what is okay for them to do? Give them a plan. You see, kids are a lot like a computer, right? And most of you guys use computers, so you'll understand this whenever I say it. But in a computer, if you want to access something, you go to a file, right? You click open that file, and then inside there are the different things that you can click on and access, right? And so the idea being is that if I'm working on like a logo for my website business, I put all the different things that I've done on this logo into a file. Then I open it up and I look at the one that I want and I select it and I go and I do whatever I need to do with that, right? Kids are the same way. If kids get to a situation that we've never talked to them about, what happens is they go and they click on that little file and they open it up. Okay, what do I do? And kids does this, this, and this. Double click and they open that file up and there ain't anything in there. So they don't want to know, they don't know what to do. And so some of them get aggressive and they fight, you know, they over, you know, the unmeasured response, or some of them just turn in on themselves and let the kids do whatever they want to them. I don't know about you guys, but for my kids, that's not okay. I don't want my kids to either become ultra-aggressive or ultra-passive. That's not what I want for them. So it's very important to teach your kids, where are the boundaries? What can they do? What are they allowed to do? What are they allowed to do with, what does it come to do in self-defense? In your family, what do you believe about self-defense? And teach your kids about those certain things. If a kid's beating them up at school, what are they allowed to do? Do they know how to do it? Or in your family, do you say, absolutely not. Violence is not an option on the table here. You need to do these things here, X, 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 and X, right? But teach your kids. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn that into like a triple X thing. But teach your kids what to do. So that way when they click on that file, they'll have heard it in their head. Oh, do this, do this, do this, and do this. Or do this. Or if I'm in the process, give them those subroutines to access so that they can do these things that is what we consider to be right or wrong in this case. So give your kids those things, and I'm telling you that you will benefit from it. Also, allow your kids to problem solve. This is kind of building off of what number one we talked about, where he said, teach your kiddos how to respond to these other kiddos. Allow them to problem solve. Let them figure out on their own what they should do. I'm not saying that you just say, go figure it out. Process with them. Have them think. The reason that I say this is that this will not be the last one of these kids that they'll meet. I mean, let's be honest. As adults, we know those people that would try to take advantage of us in many cases. We work with these people still in some cases. And so this will not be the last one of these. And the reality is maybe we can sweep in and save them. Maybe as a parent, we can come in and take these things away from them. But in reality, they'll deal with it again. And do they have the skills to solve how to get out of this problem? And if they have depended on us up until this point to be able to deal with this, then in reality, we're not doing them a whole lot of good. So allow your kids to problem solve. Allow them to think through those things, and you're really, really helping them off. Also, we don't want our kids becoming over-dependent on us to solve problems. I see this a lot. Again, I think I've mentioned this a dozen times, but it's one of my favorite episodes. We had Dr. Donna Volpita on a while back, and she talked about building resiliency in kids. A beautiful episode. If you haven't heard it, go check out that episode. You can go and search for that up on thefamilypodcastnetwork.com, travel over there to the top bar where it says where to start and go to search for a topic. And then you can search Donna, D-O-N-N-A, and you will find it inside there. Click on that and listen to it. It's an amazing episode, and I highly recommend it. Very, very good. But again, a lot of the reasons why we've developed these teacup kids that are not resilient, who break and shatter at every crisis that they have, a lot of it's because we've come in and solved their problems. Now, I know the heart, again, of the reader who sent this in, and I want you to hear me say, I know that's not your heart here, but I see it in a lot of cases. So I am generalizing this out to outside just your question, to other folks that might be asking this question. So again, we do not want our kids becoming over-dependent on us. And so with all that said, I want to be really honest here. What I've gone through here in this first 15 minutes is not really the question that you have had. And I do acknowledge that. And we're now going to shift into answering your question. So I detected two questions out of what you said. Number one, do you suggest going through the school? When we've got a problem with our kids having a problem with another kid at school, do I recommend going through the school? I'm going to go ahead and say yes for several reasons. Let me go through those with you. Number one, it allows the institution that you're working with, the school in this case, to fix the problem. If it was me, if I was an administrator at a school and something like this was happening and there was a major problem there and I knew that this kid was a solid kid who'd been taught boundaries and all that other stuff was going on and changes weren't happening, I'd want to know about it. I'd want to be able to fix it. That's just what I would want. Reason number two that I think that we should go through the school, or the reason number two why it is a good idea to go through the school, they may not be aware that this is going on. Sometimes these kids that do this are really smart, and they know how to do it, and they're tough to catch. And so bringing this to a school's attention, to a principal's attention, could very well help this school begin to look for it more specifically. I will tell you this. Listen very carefully. Do not get upset if you turn this in with a kid or to a teacher about a kid or to a principal about a kid and then you don't get immediate results. Remember, a lot of times school are subject to the innocent until proven guilty thing as well. I don't think that's the wrong way to do it either. I think that's the way it should be. And so you may do it once and may not see results. You may do it twice and you may not see results. You may do it a third time and you may not see results. That's not abnormal. But remember, every time you do it, you're starting a paper trail on this kid. And one little thing of you saying it ain't going to cause much of anything would be my guess. Maybe some shuffles around, but most of that's just going to be placating you just to try to keep you happy as a parent. Maybe twice, nothing's going to really happen. Maybe three times. But what happens is you develop this paper trail, and other kids start having the same problem, and other parents who you've recommended listen to this episode today that you shared on Facebook hear it as well, and they come and deliver the same reports about this kid. Those kind of records build up, and that is what will get these kiddos, you know, to have the ball dropped on them. You know, that's what we're wanting more than anything. As parents, we would like quicker results, of course. As parents, we would like super quick, swift justice in this case. But the reality is our justice system really does work slow, and in a lot of cases, that's good. I mean, if I was on trial for something that I didn't do, I wouldn't want it to go super quick and then me be convicted, right? I would want adequate time to have all the evidence presented. So same thing goes with schools. Allow them to do that. Allow them to work on it. And again, they may just not even be aware that this is going on. And then reason number three, there may be other kids that are involved. I also recommend that you get the school involved first, because we don't know if this kid's doing it to a dozen other kids. And maybe your kid has – I mean, if you're listening to this show and if you're emailing in asking questions about this, I already know in my mind that you're a solid parent. Regardless, if you're like me and you have those areas to grow in, you're solid. And so your kid has a wonderful parent to come home to that is concerned for them and cares about them and is interested in growing themselves to help make that life for them better. I mean, you're an amazing person. However, these little kiddos that may be getting victimized by this particular perpetrating kid, there may be a few of them that don't have any support network. And let me tell you, I have had little kids, little boys and little girls in my office that have admitted that if it hadn't have been for sitting down with me, they'd have killed themselves that week, that month. They were talking about it, or they were first time in their mind they had thought about it. And so we need to be able to get that out there to get teachers aware of what's going on with certain kids and what's happening, because we just don't know. We just never know who it is out there that is really getting hurt, who has nobody to support them, that doesn't have the amazing mom and dad like you guys are that are calling in and listening to the show to give them that safety, that harbor from the storm, right? So again, we need schools to be aware of what's going on, because we just don't know who's getting hurt. One of my suggestions with this is, again, be flexible with the school. Sometimes schools just don't have any teeth. Like we talked about with the conviction process here, I mean, sometimes it just takes time. And a lot of times these parents, I mean, these teachers don't really have any serious teeth about what they can do, especially if you get a leadership, you know, like a principal and a vice, you know, what do they call those? It's the principal and the superintendent. If you get, you know, you get two of those that aren't very strong leaders, that don't really drop the hammer on these kinds of things once there's, you know, sufficient evidence, you know, you may get a place that just doesn't have any teeth. They'll gum it, but no real change will happen because nothing sticks. Sometimes there's just circumstantial evidence. I mean, in reality, we know that we trust our kids and we believe our kids and we hear these reports that are going on. But in a lot of cases, good leaders will look at that and say this is circumstantial. And we don't want to bring a conviction and drop something down on somebody's head just based off of a few testimonies from a parent, even if it was me. And I'm saying this if it was me bringing it to them, just a parent who's hearing it from a kid who wasn't there. So in other words, you're getting second to third hand information already. And so, a good one's going to hear that, take it seriously, and begin watching for it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, again, they can bring the hammer of justice down on this kid right out the gate. And then sometimes, I'll be honest, the perpetrator develops kind of I don't care mentality. So these, you know, these principals, superintendents, and teachers will make them write pages. Well, I don't care. So then they'll give them detention. Well, I don't care. So then they'll get inter-school suspension. Well, I don't care. And then they get reassigned, like here in Abilene, and they call it RAC, Reassignment Center, which is like prison for kids, basically, in a old 1920s school that we have here, and they've put like sheets of metal over the windows and whatnot. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is a jail for kids. I don't care. So there's nothing really that these teachers can do that these kids really care about. And so in a lot of cases, it's hard for some of these, you know, these leadership teams and whatnot in schools to really be able to make a change. Am I saying that's okay? Most certainly not. Am I letting people off the hook because of that? Absolutely not. They have an ethical responsibility to make an environment that is safe for everybody, that includes being made fun of, being hurt, pushed around, whatever else. Every kid needs to feel safe in a place. So Anyway, again, just be flexible with your schools. Work with them. Understand that it's a working process for them. You may not get the exact results that you feel like you should get right out the gate, but just work with them. Stay honest. Stay open. And in most cases, you can square this stuff away. So moving on to the second part of your question, you asked, do you deal directly with the parent? Do you deal directly with the parent? The answer is, I'm going to say, maybe. Maybe. Now, like we mentioned before, typically, this kind of thing works best if you have a really good relationship already built up with this particular parent. Again, it goes back to the, you know, people don't care what you know until they know that you care about them. And so if you've got a really good relationship with this person built up, I would say definitely do. I mean, you have a responsibility as a person in a relationship, whether it's a friendship or an acquaintanceship, to allow that person the opportunity to make changes if it's something that's hurting your kid or y'all's relationship. And it's not fair to hold that in. So in cases where you know them, even in just an acquaintance level, absolutely is the answer. You need to go talk to them, especially if you can do it in a way where you know that you care about this person, you want good results for them. If you can walk into it with that heart, then you can get out of a situation like that, just scot-free, and it can be a really nice experience. However, if you are not walking into it with their interest in mind, as a good leader would do, in the sense of trying to protect their feelings and emotions and take those things into account, be empathic, putting yourself in their shoes and imagining what's going on and expecting the best in them and not the worst, which I know I just gave you a tall order, but it is possible. If you can walk into it with that, I almost guarantee you success with that kind of thing. People respond very well to that because the minute you made it known, I care about you and even your kid, even though they're hurting my kid, I care about you. You can almost always see results with that. So if you've got a good relationship, the answer is all heck yes. All heck yes. Go do it. Visit with them. I recommend that if you don't know them, go to the school approach first. Start it with the school, visit with them, do that 2, 3, or 4 times. Give it 2 to 4 months to see what changes are going to occur. It's very, very important that you've done that. After you've tried that approach, then start thinking about going to that parent and visiting with them and see what's going on there. Remember that some parents may not be available. I mean, you may come pick your kid up at school every week, but this kid may have to walk 5 miles to get home. You just don't know. So, I really kind of hashed this out with my wife because I started thinking, is there some way you can take it to the school to go to the parent? And in most cases, schools aren't going to release you like parents' names and addresses. They're just not going to do it. It's a liability and information exchange issue like HIPAA would be for doctors and whatnot. And they just can't release those types of things. And so, anyway, maybe you see them picking up their kid and you can swing by and talk to them, or you see them at the pickup zone or something like that. Maybe you can do that. Maybe you see them at PTA meetings. Maybe you know them from church. And in those cases, the answer could be you might be able to, even if you don't necessarily have a super strong relationship. Am I saying that you have to have a strong relationship with them before you can go talk to them? Most certainly not, because I expect that many of you don't, especially in America. I've noticed, and in myself as well, but we've so lost the element of community. I mean, I was sitting there the other day looking out my door back and forth up and down the road thinking, man, how many people I knew around me. And really, it's just one people right across the street. They're good friends with us. And I started thinking, I don't know anybody. And so I've been starting to expand my boundaries a little bit and move around and visit with people, shake hands, get to know them and whatnot. You know, connect with the people that grow a garden like we do just down the road and those kinds of things. But it's hard. I got to be honest. I have to be very deliberate about it. And so we've lost a lot of this community. And I'm not saying you have to have that to go talk to them. It might work just fine. So the reason why I really kind of have to bite my tongue a little bit. Or maybe I should say that I kind of share a lot of this through gritted teeth. And the reason is that, I mean, that's a problem with good leadership nowadays and why it's so sparse. But it's hard because everybody wants to lead and confront these situations. They want to confront other people, but very few want to build those relationships with people. Everybody wants to tell the worker at work that they're not doing their job, but nobody really wants to sit down and ask them, hey, what's going on? Are you doing okay? Oh, wow, things are not going well with your wife at home. I see. So that's why you've been coming in late, because you've been fighting. Right? Nobody wants to do that anymore. Everybody just wants to tell them, do this or stop doing this. Be this way or stop being this way. But we don't really want to take the time to develop those relationships. Again, it's that positional versus persuasive leadership. right? Positional says, well, this is my child and you're going to change because it's my kid and that's important to me, and so change. The persuasive relationship builds that relationship with them so that when we come up to them, we say, hey, your kid's been doing this. Is there any way that y'all could figure out a way to make sure this stops? And because they respect us, they go, I am so sorry that's happening. Yes, I will make sure that this is not an issue again. Please forgive us. We will make sure that's, you know, that's the kind of, that's persuasive leadership. And everybody wants to be able to tell people what they're going to do. And I'm not pointing a finger here as much as this is self-evaluation. And so, again, this is not a judgmental thing. Please, oh my God, please know. This is definitely one of those for every one finger I could point. In this situation alone, there are three things pointing right back at me that I'm like, oh crap, I didn't solve that well. But again, the issue comes down to, you know, learning to be positional. I'll tell you a quick story on that. We next door to us, we have this old abandoned house. We don't have any zoning laws here in the town that I live in. And next door, there was a car parked. And you got to imagine this house. It's a decrepit, dilapidated old house, and it's just falling apart all over the place, and grass has grown up, and leaves are stacked up 3 or 4 feet tall. And in the backyard, there's an old, you know, big old giant Dodge van parked out there that's in the 70s model van, one of those big old economy vans. And there's a boat parked out there, funny enough, called the Cirrhosis of the River parked out there. And up front, there's a Chevy Lumina parked in the front, you know, they can do that theoretically. Everything except the car up front. You're not supposed to have a non-working car within so many feet of the road, and it is. And you know, it's been kind of bothering us because it's unsightly. It really is. The whole house is unsightly, but we had an issue with that. And I noticed the other day that this particular man who owns this house was over there. He's a younger guy, like my wife and I. And I saw him over there, so I thought, I'm gonna go over there and give him peace of my mind about this. And I walked over there, and I was very polite, and I was very kind about it. I said, hey, what's going on with this car? Everything, you know, I mean, what's, you know, are you going to leave it there? Are you going to move it? And he got very snarky and just kind of laughed, just like, I mean, you know, and I was so upset and offended that he had done that. And I left, and I went back home, and I thought, you know, man, what a butt, what a jerk, blah, blah, blah. And I sat there, and finally I calmed myself down. That night I sat there, and I was thinking, you know, I wonder what's going on in his life. That he's a perfectly young and capable man, but he lets it, you know, stay like that. That, I mean, if somebody were to come up and tell me that my yard was so unattractive that it was embarrassing them for the, I mean, I would just be like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I didn't even have to pay attention. And I would go out there and I'd get it straightened up that day. And so what puts a person in those shoes to where when you come and directly confront them, and I'm telling you, I was kind, I was polite, And my heart really wasn't accusatory, at least not in the way I intended for it to come across. And he still responded that way. And I never stopped to think, what's going on in his life that he can't come and get this car out of here? What's going on in his life? Maybe his wife and him are poor. Maybe they don't have any money. Maybe their mom's dying right now and he just doesn't have time to come get it. Why do I automatically assume that he's just a big jerk? He's a turd. He's lazy. Why do I assume that? Why do I not assume the best in him? And maybe his kid's dying and he's been in the hospital every day this week. Maybe he broke his foot recently and he hasn't had time. Maybe he lost his job. I don't know. But what is going on? So my encouragement is ask yourself, what's going on in this parent's life? Or they're missing that their kid is being a bully or a jerk. Or I call them stick stirrers, right? These are those ones that stir the pot and like to get people angry at each other and they create chaos and they just sit back and watch because they like it. What's going on in this parent's life that this is happening in their kid's life and they're not seeing it? Most parents come with some innate desire to protect and to love and to teach and to train their kids. What's happening that's preventing that? Natural, biological, instinctual thing. What's going on? What's going on in this kid's life that would cause them to act this way? It's very easy to turn a blind eye when we're angry at somebody. But if you can remove that anger and really cut down to the chase and see what's going on, sometimes it can make a major difference. Just like that teacher, when I told her the story about what was going on, she was like, wow, that changes everything. I never got phone calls from her again after that day because then she understood the story. And it made sense to her, and it was a lot easier to be forgiving. I'm not saying you turn blind eyes to these kinds of things, but it allows you to understand and be empathic, and even more important, you're teaching your kids to do the same thing. So, possibility, here's another thing you can also think about. I know some of the parents that come in here, a lot of times they have kiddos that have diagnosis and disorders. We had if it is something like that, we had a parent a while back who came on, Jeff Emery, he's a licensed marriage and family therapist. He came on the show a while back and talked about incurable diseases. Both of his two of his three kids have type 1 diabetes, and he kind of went through the struggles and the way that he's solved those struggles. Just a beautiful episode that is just packed full of fantastic ideas. I mean, I don't care if your kid's diagnosed with ADHD or type 1 diabetes, bipolar, anything like that. You need to listen to that show because it's heavy duty. But one of the things he mentioned was it was because his kiddos had something that was very, very big. It was something that a lot of kids just weren't going to understand. What he did was he went before the school and he went into the classroom, got permission from the teacher in advance, and he explained what type 1 diabetes was to the class and let the kids ask questions and let them get to understand. And so they walked out of there with a fantastic understanding and grasp of what type 1 diabetes was, just so that way they could take out some of the mystique to it, some of the strangeness, some of the weirdness about type 1 diabetes to kids, and just make it a something they fully understood. And so that's something else that you might think about is taking, if it is those kinds of things, taking it before the class and explaining, okay, here's what ADHD is. Here is what bipolar disorder is. If your kid gives you permission, understand you need permission, and explain that to them and take the mystery out of it. And so then that way they can understand, that's what's going on there. So that's another thing you can think about. And then the last thing is, and this was not one of the questions that was asked by the author, but I wanted to throw it in there. Do we ever go directly to the kid? I do not recommend this. I absolutely do not recommend this. Now, again, to the audience member who sent this in, I know where your heart's at in this. I know that's not your question or something that you would do. But I do recommend staying away from this. This can lead to repercussions that can be bad. It's not necessarily your jurisdiction or your authority. And so it can turn out poorly. I do want to leave you guys with one story. And why am I not saying no, don't ever do this? Why am I saying I do not recommend this? I'm going to tell you one quick story of when I saw a parent do it. It was actually me when I was in elementary school. There was this one little kid who went around he just kneed people in the testicles. That's just what he did. He would just run around it, and he kneed me several times, so much so that he actually caused some pretty major damage. And I'll let you guys go look up what a hydrocele is, but we're talking, it really made some serious damage to me because he did it 3 or 4 times in a row throughout a week. And, my wife took it, my mom took it to the principal, took it to the teachers. And this kid was smart. He knew when to do it to when he could get away from it. She explained when it was happening. They just never could catch him to do it. She didn't know who the parents were. They wouldn't release the information on where this dad was from and our mom and dad were from. And so she just didn't know what else to do. And so what she did was she came with me and was watching this particular spot. And he did it again. He kicked me right in the crotch. And a little turd. Now I'm thinking about this story. What a jerk. But she went over there and she took him by the shoulders and said, "You do not ever kick my son again. Do you understand me?" And he was just terrified. "Yes, ma'am." She goes, "If you do it again, we will make sure that this goes." I mean, she had no way to back this up, but she threw out some things that scared the crap out of him. Don't threaten him. Never, ever, ever threaten the kid. Never threaten him like to hurt him or to punch him or to hire somebody to come beat him up. Don't do that stuff. But let him know we will catch you and we will get this turned in to the school correctly. And I'll be honest, that kid never kicked me again. So, am I suggesting that this would be your approach? Almost never, ever, ever. Almost never. In this case, it was causing physical damage, so I can understand why my mom did it. Could not get the school to do that after a couple of weeks of attempting to get there. There actually led to a point where a physical manifestation of some serious damage was occurring. It's a wonder my kids came out normal. But there was a serious manifestation of some serious trauma that it was creating physically. And we couldn't get it caught. So, I mean, she took that approach. Again, it was not threatening. It was not life-threatening. It wasn't threatening his physical safety. But it was letting him know, we're watching you now. And this is going to stop. And so I will put that out there. Again, It needs to be your last resort. Last resort. After you found every last that you could imagine, you had to move to it, and then you thought of something else, and then you tried that right before somebody else suggested something else, and you tried that, and then you made it your last resort. Do not go run in there, and whatever you do, for the love of God, if you run into it too soon, don't go back and say, well, this guy I know, Trey Gibson, said I should, because that is not my advice. That is not my advice. It needs to be in very, very rare occasions. You need to seek a lot of counsel before you do something like that, and be smart about it. So, recapping it, what should you do? Number one, should you go to the school? Yes, I absolutely think that should be your number one first thing that you do. Should you go to the parent? Number two, maybe. Maybe is the answer, especially if you've got a good relationship. If you really want to see the best change, build a relationship, then go to them. Should you go to the kid? I would almost say don't even put that on the table. Don't even put that on the table until you've used up all the other resources you can, one and two, and use that only in extreme situations, and be smart about it, okay? Be smart. Well, guys, that is all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those kids that are not. Man, I hope you guys have a great week. Hope you had a great weekend this weekend. We will be seeing you guys on Wednesday of this week, where we will enjoy another episode of the Family Podcast Network. You guys have a great week. We'll see you at the next show.